Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
Welcome to another episode of Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, Audioboom, TuneIn, Google Play, anywhere that you can find podcasts. Make sure you subscribe, leave us a review, tell your friends to subscribe, check out all the other podcasts on the Locked On Podcast Network as well. If you want to advertise with us, make sure you email us at lockedonbulls@gmail.com with any inquiries there. Find us on Twitter at Locked On Bulls. Find us on Facebook at Locked On Bulls as well. I'm Sean Hyken of The Athletic. With me, as always, Cody Westerlund of 670 The Score. Cody, do you believe for a second that Jimmy Butler didn't know how many points he had in the fourth quarter?
Nope. Absolutely not. Jimmy Butler goes for 52 points in the Bulls' 118-111 win against the Hornets, a win that momentarily righted a ship for a Bulls team that had been in a rut here recently. Huge performance from Jimmy, who claimed, and emphasis on the word claimed, that when he had 49 points in the final half minute, he didn't know how many points he had until Michael Carter Williams told him, hey, go to the free throw line and get 50, after Hornets coach Steve Clifford had a little uprising on the sideline and got a technical foul, and the Bulls were trying to decide who would shoot the free throws. Jimmy did for 50, added two more free throws. Bulls win, all is well. Maybe the performance of Jimmy Butler's career. He had 53 last January in Philly against the lowly 76ers team. This came against a better team, though, Sean.
I think this is absolutely the best performance of Jimmy's career. I know he had one more point in the Sixers game, but that was like they needed a 40-point second half from Jimmy Butler to beat the Philadelphia 76ers, who have, you know, a handful of NBA-caliber players on their team last year. This is against a team that, frankly, this season has been better than the Bulls. I know that the Hornets were missing Cody Zeller tonight, their starting center, so that was kind of a big piece they were missing. But, this is a good team. This is one of the best defensive teams in the league. The Bulls needed this win because their next two games are against Cleveland and Toronto, which are the two best teams in the East. And then you look at their schedule the rest of the way between now and the All-Star break. It gets pretty ugly. There are a lot of back-to-backs. There are a lot of games against playoff teams. They have that six-game road trip with the Warriors and the Rockets and the Thunder. If you can get this win, now they're back to 17 and 18. They're just one game below 500. If they had lost this game, they would have fallen to three games below 500 with the Cavs and the Raptors coming up, and that could have basically another tough stretch here could have ended their season. This is the most crucial win, I believe, of the season for the Bulls, and because of that and just because of what the stakes were, I think this is the performance of Jimmy Butler's career.
Yeah, Jimmy always says, I do whatever's necessary for the Bulls to win. That's my goal, whatever the night calls for. And we have to note that Dwayne Wade was out on this night with swelling in his left knee. That kind of flared up after the Bulls lost to the Bucks on Saturday night and into Sunday, lasted into Monday, and they ruled him out before game time. And Dwayne had played five games in a 7-day stretch, all of them, including the back-to-back. And they might, we'll get into this later, but they might be a little more cautious with him on back-to-backs moving forward. But he was out. Rajon Rondo's benching continued, second straight game in its entirety. That looks like that status quo going to stay that way because other young players kind of stepped up, Denzel Valentine and Jaren Grant, around Jimmy. But I want to get back to Jimmy here a little bit. What he did allowed them to step up. I mean, he torched everyone. He torched Nick Batum. He torched Michael Kidd-Gilchrist. Anyone the Hornets ran at him off the bench. Kemba Walker got on him in a couple times in pick-and-roll situations. And it's worth noting, too, in this game, like, the Bulls used Michael Carter in some screen roll situations.
So you just pulled a Neil Funk and said Michael Carter instead of Michael Carter Williams.
I was getting there. I was going to add hyphen Williams eventually. But Michael Carter Williams, as you pointed out, a guy who's not a great three-point shooter, to Fred Hoiberg's credit, did use him as a screener sometimes, too, to free up Jimmy. And what Jimmy did well in this game, he attacked. You know what I mean, Sean, from the start? Mm-hmm. 22 trips to the free throw line. His 21 made free throws, tied a career high. Just spectacular in getting to the rim time and again on any defender. And the Hornets didn't run a double team at him, which was a little puzzling to me. They did a few times, but not with any authority. And we've seen a few teams do that with some success. Obviously, you don't want other guys going off, but they got good contributions from youngsters. But Jimmy's aggressiveness and pace tonight was just spectacular.
Right, and he talked about this after the game, just how much easier it is to play when you have guys that can knock down shots, and you can kick it out to a shooter, and you have more space to drive. I mean, it's a pretty basic concept, but it's something that obviously the Bulls have struggled with this season, and I don't think Jimmy was trying to throw shade at anybody with those comments. That was certainly, I don't think, his intention, but it just shows how different this team is when it's Jimmy Butler with all these young guys versus them trying to make this three alphas thing work and Dwayne Wade using a lot of possessions. To me, this game was almost, and I wrote this in my column for The Athletic that'll probably be up by the time you read this, and you should make sure you subscribe to The Athletic to read my coverage of the Bulls, among other things, on Chicago sports by our great staff. But this was kind of a window into what the Bulls could have been this year if the front office had focused on either getting younger players or signing players that actually fit around Jimmy instead of basically just going after the biggest names that were available to them and Rondo and Wade, even though that was not a great fit on the court. And this was, you know, I don't think they're going to play this well every night. Obviously, you know, this is probably not sustainable what they got from Denzel Valentine tonight and, you know, the post scoring that they got from Doug McDermott and some of this other stuff. But just this game was just so much more aesthetically pleasing than the way they've been playing lately, and it just feels like this is kind of where the direction the Bulls should be going in.
It's absolutely a window into what could have been all season long, and maybe hopefully we do see more of it as the season progresses. And I found it just entertaining. Wouldn't the Bulls be more fun to watch if they made a chase for an 8 seed in 116 to 112 losses, and then the next night win a game 108 to 106? And like, at times they're leaky defensively when they don't play Robin Lopez as much, when they have Jaren Grant and Denzel Valentine and Doug McDermott out there for more minutes. Like, there are problems defensively. The other team gets some really, really easy buckets, but the Bulls got to the hoop a lot more. And Jaren Grant didn't finish well necessarily at the rim, but he found a way to get to the rim on multiple occasions and slice through that defense. And that was interesting to me because it brings up another bigger picture question. You mentioned Jimmy Butler, and when you said focus on the future with players who fit around Jimmy, what I think you really meant is just guys that don't need their ball in their hands as much and don't have to dribble as much. Like, Rajon Rondo and Dwayne Wade are at their best when they're dribbling the basketball. In Rondo's case, creating shots for others, creating space, weaving through the defense, seeing things other people might not see. Dwayne Wade, ball in his hands, attacking the hoop, and he's one of the greatest players in NBA history, a Hall of Famer. And obviously he's 34, doesn't have that skill set quite as much on a nightly basis, but it's a big burden to ask Jimmy every single night to carry an offensive load like he did tonight. And I don't mean scoring 52 points, but I mean ball in his hands, possession after possession after possession, when he's also the one taking the contact at the rim so often in a way that other point guards might not have to. But it raises a question, Sean. Are the Bulls better off as a team with Jimmy Butler playing point guard for really long stretches, maybe? Maybe not point guard Jimmy. That's not what you're going to list in the starting lineup, but more Jimmy at point guard, ball in his hands.
I almost feel like it's not the worst idea in the world, and obviously Jimmy is not nearly the passer that James Harden is, but use him at least to some semblance of the way that Mike D'Antoni has been using Harden in Houston this year. And basically, the problem with that, they can't do this year because the Bulls just don't have the personnel where, like, move Patrick Beverley off the ball and he can spot up and hit a shot. The Bulls just don't have that personnel. But next year, if the roster is different and they have more shooters and they have more complementary players, that's a direction I could definitely see this Bulls roster going in a way to maybe rebuild around Jimmy Butler and make him not have to do as much all the time.
We'd be great front office personnel. Get a point guard who can't dribble. That solves your problems for the Bulls.
There you go.
And Jimmy has been spectacular, but he seems comfortable in this role because it's like when Rondo has the ball and then the ball gets swung to Jimmy on some nights, it feels like he holds it and goes into isolation mode, maybe because he doesn't feel like it's his primary responsibility to create for other players. Maybe it's because a lot of times, and this is a problem for Fred Hoiberg and a responsibility on him, maybe it's because Jimmy's getting the ball with 12 seconds left on the clock, and at that point, when Jimmy needs to attack, he needs to attack for himself, maybe, and not for his teammates. But when he has that ball in his hands from the start across half court, 19 seconds on the shot clock, and Fred's giving him the responsibility, like, sometimes if you give people more power, like, they step up and do what's best for themselves and the team and find that balance, and you have to give them the responsibility. And it seems like at times Jimmy has really done that. I think that was a storyline, if I remember right, late in the season last year, I don't know if Derrick Rose was out for a few games or what, but I know there's a game at Milwaukee where Jimmy saw the floor really well, had a big assist game, and we wrote about that, and like that was a talking point in just a lot of areas. Do you recall that or remember that, or just kind of the transformation of Jimmy?
I do remember that. I remember that there was kind of, because remember, leading into last season, there was that whole report that maybe there was some tension between Derrick and Jimmy, and then you hear about, like, Jimmy saying he wants to play point guard, and at the time, just because of that whole dynamic, it was seen as, oh, well, was that a shot at Derrick Rose that he's taking? But, you know, no, I think it could be effective. And here's another hypothetical that I want to throw out there. Our buddy Jay Pack from FanRag and Bloggable tweeted this tonight. This would never actually happen, because I don't think he would ever go for it. But the idea, like, let's say they decide to, you know, go with this youth movement.
Yeah.
And have Dwayne Wade maybe transition into a sixth man, like Manu Ginobili type role, where he just runs the second unit and just scores and just dominates other teams' second unit. I don't think that would ever happen, because I don't think Dwayne would ever actually, like, sign off on that. But that's, I mean, it's an interesting thought.
I like the idea in theory. In practice, like,
there's no way he'd go for it.
I don't see that in any regard. And I don't even think we have to go that far yet. Like, let's see what happens.
I'm talking about like potentially next season. I'm thinking pretty far ahead.
That's obviously a big off-season topic that you'd want to tackle and address someone's role change of that stature. But even just Wednesday, I want to see how Jimmy and Dwayne coalesce offensively and what the focus is. Like, obviously, Jimmy's not going to have the ball quite as much, but can he still be that centerpiece of the offense, possession after possession, in the point guard role with Dwayne Wade on the floor, or does it get a little clogged up? What do you think? Like, what should the Bulls do moving forward? I just want to see more of what happened in this game, because, as you said, it was aesthetically pleasing, and it was much closer to the brand of basketball Fred Hoiberg wants to play than the Bulls have been playing, because it involved rim attacks, quick decision-making, and quick pace. Three-point shooting, still terrible, but the other three things, good.
Yeah, this wasn't total hoyball, but it was hoyball adjacent, we'll just say.
Hoyball adjacent. They can't reach full throttle hoyball
until they have some actual three-point shooters on the team. But, yeah, I mean, this is, I think, what you'd like to see, and I'll be interested to see how that works with a guy like Dwayne Wade, who's not an outside shooter and also does need the ball in his hands a lot. Like, you know, if they can kind of keep this balance that they had tonight with Jimmy Butler making plays and everybody else just kind of being able to fill in, if you also have Dwayne Wade needing the touches that he needs.
I think that Dwayne would be fine with that happening, even more responsibility to Jimmy, because he's so smart. They get along so well. Jimmy respects him so much, but Dwayne respects Jimmy too. I mean, that's...
And Dwayne has said time and time again that this is Jimmy Butler's team, and Jimmy Butler is the star who's in his prime, and he's the one that's going to be counted on to carry a bigger load.
But here's where Fred Hoiberg comes into the picture. It's incumbent upon him, if we see this, and this is what's best for the Bulls, to make it happen more often. Because it's one thing to see it and say, we'll do it a little more and everyone be on board. It's another to put it into practice and to sit down with Dwayne Wade and have the conversation. Hey, like, we're going to keep doing this. I think Dwayne Wade would be fine and receptive to that. More the ball in Jimmy's hands, more Jimmy as more of a point guard. I don't think Dwayne would really care. You know what
he's
I mean?
Got his money. He's
yeah,
good.
He's got his money. He would still get his touches.
His legacy is cemented.
And, like, I think Dwayne, again, he's smart. Like, he can see how well the offense ran at times in this game and just flowed. And, again, the Bulls didn't execute at their best by any stretch of the imagination. And when they did have some of these younger guys on the floor, Denzel Valentine hit his first three 3-pointers and looked really aggressive in shooting them. They got, like you mentioned, Doug McDermott some post touches. Mm-hmm. Like, they gave up a lot defensively on the other end just because they got worse.
They don't have the personnel.
When you don't play Robin Lopez on that end as much, and they didn't because they went with a lot of Taj and Nico in this game. But at the same time, like, you could see there was more of a flow, and Dwayne Wade would recognize that too. So maybe the Bulls inch closer toward that. If they do, I think, obviously, everything that happened in this game, it did nothing to help Rajon Rondo get back on the court anytime sooner.
I don't think he's ever going to play another game for the Bulls unless there's an injury.
That's a completely fair question. And I think in all of this, again, Rondo, second straight, did not play coach's decision benching. And there's no signs that it's going to slow down. At morning shoot-around, Fred Hoiberg was asked, have you discussed a second unit reserve role with Rajon Rondo? And he said, no, we haven't gotten that far, which I thought was a little puzzling. Like, you're the coach. I think you do need to make sure at some point here you're really clear and set a plan moving forward and don't leave him in limbo.
Well, how much of this is Fred's having not had that conversation with him, and how much of this is Fred telling us that he didn't have that conversation with him or not telling us that he had that conversation with him?
That's a fair question as well. Fred was asked, would you be comfortable with him in a reserve role?
And he said potentially.
He said potentially, which I thought was telling. It wasn't, yeah, I can see that at some point sliding in and running well with X, Y, and Z. You know what I mean? No, it was potentially like, not now. I don't feel that way right now. Maybe if something happens down the line, I'll have to feel that way, is what I read into it.
And by the way, another thing I want to say, I mean, since, you know, this whole Rondo benching going on, just kind of because of the history that he has of this kind of stuff happening, it's been really easy to, you know, jump to the assumption, okay, you know, he's just going to not take this well and not handle it well. Fred has said that he's handled it as well as he could have, and that's the impression that I've gotten from, you know, people in the organization too. But also, just anecdotally, tonight, I saw him after the game go, like, off in a corner, just, like, talking very animatedly with Bobby Portis and Isaiah Cannon, who are two guys who both also didn't play in this game, and talking with Michael Carter-Williams, who was taking the starting spot. Like, he's, from everything we've seen, he's very much engaged in terms of talking to these younger players, giving them advice, you know, staying positive and being a good teammate. And I think you have to, I mean, Rondo has the reputation that he has, and a lot of it I think is deserved, but from everything we've seen, he has legitimately handled this pretty well.
This is a workplace for them too, not an office workplace like some people might have. But it's a workplace, and it's not awkward. Like, I think a lot of people probably have had awkward interactions with people in their workplace, or someone gets a job you want or a promotion you want or something like that. It hasn't been awkward from everything we've seen. It has been business as usual. Just the awkward part's on the basketball court. You know what I mean? But again, like, the options here, and I know we had a podcast that we recorded Sunday, and you might listen to Sunday or Monday, before the game, on options for Rondo. But like Sean and I talked about this more, we've written about it a little more, just go through the teams when you get a chance to look at the rosters across the NBA, read up a little bit. Like, a buyout seems like the best case scenario that's logical for the Bulls. Like, the path to a trade, I just don't see it.
I don't either, because at this point, for another team, and we've talked, and we don't want to rehash this too much, but for another team to want to take on Rondo's contract, the Bulls would have to attach another asset, whether it be one of their young players or a pick. And I think that would be incredibly short-sighted for them to do that, considering where they are as a franchise. And so I think what's the most likely thing to happen, they're going to keep him on the roster, keep their options open. Between now and the trade deadline, let's just say another team's point guard gets hurt and they get desperate. Maybe they get a trade offer that's actually palatable for them. And then by the trade deadline, if that doesn't happen after the deadline, they'll buy him out.
Yeah, and the thing with a buyout, too, is that the contract gets amended a little bit. So the team that has him can save $1 million, maybe $2 million, something
it's
like
two
that.
Two a year. Cause,
it's whatever the case. Like, I mean, Joe Johnson, when he got bought out by the Nets, gave them $3 million back.
Well, no, I don't think that's going to happen with Rondo. I think they're going to just eat this $14 million this year. But what they're going to be able to do, though, is, since next year only $3 million of that contract is guaranteed, they'll be able to stretch that out over
well,
the next...
Well, that's a possibility too, but if he does have a second team lined up, if his agent goes to the back channels and lines a second team up that wants to pay him the vet minimum or something, because they obviously don't want to trade for him and take on all that salary, they don't want to claim his whole $14 million in salary.
Right.
Like, he can renegotiate a little bit of guaranteed money with the Bulls and drop that a touch. So there is a slight advantage for the Bulls in that regard, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, but I also have my doubts another team is going to pick him up.
Yeah, so I mean, if that's the case, though, like, straight waivers and you don't see him play again this year is a possibility, because, I mean, the Bulls have admitted they're at a season's crossroads. Like, Hoiberg admitted that. Taj Gibson has referenced that.
John Paxson admitted that pretty much on that Christmas radio interview.
Yeah, that's why we're seeing what we're seeing right now. And Rondo individually is at a career crossroads, and that's why he's going to, I expect, continue to handle it professionally. And I think he wants to play basketball. You know, he's a proud individual.
Yeah,
and
I don't.
He's
and
a champion. He's a 10-year vet.
And I don't blame him. And the what he told us the other night after he didn't play against the Bucks about how he would hope that the Bulls would be willing to trade him or buy him out if he wasn't going to play. I don't think that's him being mad that he's not playing and demanding a trade. I think it's entirely reasonable for him to say, look, you know, I came here to be the starter. If you're not going to start me, that's fine, but let me go explore another situation, which I think is perfectly reasonable. I don't think that reflects badly on him, and I think that the front office, if it comes to that, is going to be more than willing to help him out with that.
Yeah, there's reason for everyone to make this as little of a mess as possible.
Right, and Rondo, like we said, he has every incentive to play nice about this and put on a good face and be a good sport about it, because if he flames out here, if this becomes like a big blow-up where, you know, they end on bad terms, he ended on bad terms in Dallas, he didn't get brought back in Sacramento, even though he put up really good numbers, he had kind of worn it out in Boston by then. If he leaves his fourth team on bad terms in a little over 2 years, he might not get another NBA job in his career, and he's a smart guy, and I think he knows that if this doesn't work, if he can say, you know, this situation didn't work out, but at least I handled it well, he can go to another team and say, look, I can bring that veteran experience, maybe he'll get another shot.
Yeah, I'll make a last point here on the Bulls. Like, I feel like this Rondo situation and saga is like, coaches always reference day-to-day in the NBA for injuries, they reference day-to-day for the mindset of attacking that night's game. But I don't think the Bulls have an exact plan here, because Fred Hoiberg claims he hasn't talked to Rondo much about it. He certainly hasn't publicly explained anything. He wanted to see what these young guys were going to do, but at the same time, if they're really bad or there's an injury, like, they don't want to be rid of Rondo completely yet. And Taj Gibson at Shoot Around also said, I sought an explanation for why Rondo got benched. I inquired about one, and no one gave me an answer.
I thought that was a little bit weird.
It was a little weird, and again, I think a lot of the Bulls' problems this year fall in the front office for the roster construction. I think some of the communication things dating back to Hoiberg with the Joakim Noah situation in his rookie season, that, and then if he really hasn't talked to Rondo yet, and Taj, a respected veteran, hasn't got an explanation yet, either the Bulls literally have no clue, or Hoiberg's not communicating what the reasoning and all that is clearly to players who should probably be in the loop more than they are. But that's the least of the Bulls' worries right now, really. Like, they just need to keep racking up W's and finding some three-point shooting at some point to win basketball games on the floor, because for a night they were better without Rajon Rondo on the floor. They will return to the court Wednesday at Cleveland, and the Bulls will be 17-18 when they take the floor in that game. Dwayne Wade, a few notes, we expect him back probably with that knee swelling, no guarantee, but Fred Hoiberg sounded hopeful about Wade returning for that game. You know he loves playing against LeBron, so that would seem to make sense, and he would have several days, 3 days of rest. At that point, Denzel Valentine rolled his left ankle. It looked really bad. It didn't seem as bad after the game. He wasn't on crutches.
He said he's day-to-day.
So he's day-to-day as well, after probably the best performance of his career, in addition to the best performance of Jimmy Butler's career, 52 points on this night. That, again,
the thresholds are a little bit different.
Yep, was about Jimmy Butler. As always, we're Locked On Bulls. You can find us on Twitter, at Locked On Bulls. You can find Sean, at Hyken, myself, at Cody Westerlund. Facebook page for Locked On Bulls. If you'd like to navigate to the podcast there, send us emails at lockedonbulls@gmail.com. Most of all, subscribe to the podcast.
That's right. You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, Audio Boom, TuneIn, Google Play, Podbean. Anywhere you can find podcasts, you can find us. Make sure you subscribe. Tell your friends to subscribe. Leave us lots of 5-star reviews. Check out the other podcasts in the Locked On Podcast Network, Locked On NBA, Locked On NFL, Locked On Fantasy Football, Locked On Fantasy Basketball, Locked On NFL Draft. All 30 NBA teams have their own podcast. All 32 NFL teams have their own podcast. If you want to advertise with us, make sure you email us at lockedonbulls@gmail.com. We will not have an episode tomorrow because I'm flying to Cleveland for the Cavs game on Wednesday. We will have an episode after that game. But until then, thanks for listening. Take it easy.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.